Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast, number 383. I am staring out my window at the San Diego Convention Center for San Diego Comic-Con. It's preview day. It's preview night tonight. And I've been here like a day, and all the Comic-Con stuff was set up yesterday, but there wasn't anyone here yet, so it was a little creepy and apocalyptic. But now it's going to be apocalyptic in the other sense, in that 100,000-plus human beings are going to descend on San Diego, and I could not be more excited. It's my favorite time of year. So I'm moderating a ton of panels, and they're all insanely amazing. If you go to Nerdist.com, you can check the schedule of where I'll be. I'll be moderating, like, you know, Walking Dead and Breaking Bad and Community and Marvel and Warner Brothers Legendary and World's End. Also come to our Nerdist panel, which is Saturday, I believe, at 3 p.m. at the Indigo Ballroom. And then I'm doing a signing at the Legendary booth Friday at 3 o'clock. So all that information on Nerdist.com. Hopefully you got to come to San Diego this year because the weather's beautiful. And it's just, I don't know, there's just a vibe. It's like mid-year Christmas that's in the air, but without the cold and without all of the knocking. No, actually, there is a lot of knocking people over to get presents. It's pretty much exactly like Christmas without the snow. Pretend that the sand, it's a white mid-year Christmas where the sand is the snow. So we're going to go out and build sandmen later on. I'd like to thank LegalZoom for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. A lot of people don't have a will, but you should, because if something happens to you, then your stuff goes away, and not to the people that you would want it to go to. So LegalZoom.com will totally help you out. It's not expensive. It's not too time-consuming. Most people finish the process online within 20 minutes, and it's not like some crappy fill-in-the-blank form. Your will is state-specific and personalized based on the information that you give it. Best of all, 12 years experience at LegalZoom helping people with important legal matters. So get your special discount. Be sure to enter Nerdist in the referral box at checkout for wills, powers of attorney, trusts, and more. Go to LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom can provide self-help services at your specific direction or connect you with an attorney, but they are not a law firm. Thanks to LegalZoom for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, which is the cast and director of The Conjuring, which I moderated their panel at New York Comic Con last year, and the footage looked incredible. It's James Wan, who directed, who did Insidious and the original Saw, and he wanted to go in an opposite direction, and you know, instead of doing, you know, like a chop up creepy gore fest, it is a non chop up creepy haunted house ghost movie. And he did a fantastic job. If you have a chance, go see The Conjuring. It opens Friday, July 19th, which is just a couple of days from now. And so I had them come to Meltdown. James came to Meltdown with Ron Livingston and Lily Taylor. And we had a chat. So here it is, the Nerdist Podcast, number 383, with the cast of The Conjuring.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Sure, yeah, go ahead.
What's social media?
Yeah, we're the worst nerds.
Someone's actually started.
What is, yeah,
no, no,
I don't understand.
Someone's actually started abbreviating it in an irritating way. They're like, hey, can I put this up on SoMe? And I'm like, you could just say social media.
So SoMe sounds like a great fuck place.
It really is a delicious. They have a great
SoMe.
Did you see the new place in Hollywood? It's called I Don't Know. I love
it's
it.
A Y E D U N U. I don't know.
Oh, hipsters. Fuck them. Welcome to the.
It might replace 902 pho is my.
Nothing
favorite.
Can replace 902
pho. you don't like Absolutely Phobulous? That's pretty.
Oh, I've seen Absolutely Phobulous.
Yeah, that's great. That's actually a good place.
Is it a British themed pho place?
No, it's not. It's down West Hollywood. Drunk.
You just go in, it's the British. Set of Absolutely Fabulous.
There's two drunk ladies serving you.
There was actually a place in La Crescenta, a Chinese place that's been there for years. I don't know if it's still there. It is actually called the Poo Ping Palace, right off Foothill Boulevard.
I don't see a problem with that.
That's very not nice. Acceptable. They should have shut that down. They should give it an F on the window.
In my old neighborhood, there was a Fuck It Thai.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Fuck It Thai. Fuck It Thai.
I guess we'll just have to go... one by one, James and Ron and Lily. I actually saw The Conjuring over the weekend, and it's fantastic.
Oh,
and
cool. Thank you.
I moderated your panel at New York Comic Con, which...
That's right, yeah.
Which was really fun.
Sorry. You did an outstanding job.
Oh, exactly. Wow. Nice.
Oh, thanks, Ron.
I just swore, guys. Can I swear?
Yeah, you did, yeah.
Whatever you need
We've
to say.
We've just said fuck it like 8 times.
Yeah. But, oh, okay. Wait. Is this thing on? It's Phuket.
Yeah, it's Phuket. Everyone's always pleasantly surprised, and they're like, "Is it okay if I swear?" Yeah, swear a lot if you want to.
It's okay.
Don't God, worry. Maybe we shouldn't swear.
Ruined.
Maybe we shouldn't swear.
Ruined.
It's just my laptop. It's all right. It's got a special pouch for it. Yeah.
We used to work at Apple. You don't have any connections there anymore.
No, that's long gone.
Oh shit. Matt used to be a Mac genius. If you guys have any Apple questions,
don't ask. I don't know anymore.
I don't know.
He will answer.
That's how fast technology moves.
Yeah, really, it does.
Wow.
I'm out of practice. It's not a bike. It's technology.
No, I know. It's a computer.
Thank you.
I know the difference now.
All right.
The internet is on the computer now? That's my favorite line.
Yeah, who said that?
Homer Simpson.
Oh, the internet's on the computer. One of my favorite Simpsons internet jokes is like, hey, you hear about it? I think it was Lenny. You hear about this internet? No, what's that? It's the internetting in a bathing suit. You don't have to wear underwear.
I was having problems on Twitter this morning. The in Twitter reply window was deleting characters.
Right.
And I said, is anyone else having this glitch? Jonah, don't fucking give me the first world problem sigh.
you would have done the same to me. That's
yeah, I would have. I would have.
The professional courtesy.
I didn't say it was the worst thing that ever happened to the human being.
It was like the third worst thing.
It was the third worst thing that's ever happened.
Because 9/11, your mom's dog dying.
All right, okay, we'll cut all that out. And someone gave me the someone wrote PEBCAC, and PEBCAC is an IT code for problem exists between keyboard and chair, which is what they would tell people who were fucking up their own computers.
Right.
It was just a way
that's
for them
great.
To personally.
That is so nerdy, guys.
Yeah. Or they would say ID10T, which spells idiot when you see it written out. Codes. So one by one, I have some somewhat personal connections to all of you. James, you mm-hmm. when you walked in, I said, you know my girlfriend, which you took as confrontational for some reason.
Listen, I swear, it was just the one time. I did not know.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that.
Oops. I mean, it was nuts.
So how did you meet Chloe?
I think I went to a party, and I went to a friend's party, and I think it was actually Chloe's birthday party, come to think of it. I just crashed it with one of her friends, and that was, you know, I bumped into her, and then I've seen her ever since then.
You gonna take that, bro?
No, bro. I'm the least confrontational
now, Ron, how do
person
you know
world.
Chris's girlfriend. We'll follow up
with you. I went to this party with my friend James. And then Ron, there was this circle of people that I'd seen you at a few parties, the Connie Brittons of the world, yes. And the Jen Jostin, and this group of people. Did you guys migrate out? Was it Pete? Was it Pete
it
Goldfinger?
Was Pete Goldfinger, yeah. Pete Goldfinger has been a good buddy of mine for years. I actually introduced him to Jen Jostin.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
You're responsible
Back
for his
in
entire
the day.
Family?
That's me. Yeah, I get credit for that.
Are they still together?
They are still
good,
together.
Good, then it worked out. Good job.
Beautiful girls.
They're going to hit you up for tuition money. This is your fault.
Damn it.
It really all traces back to you. And then Lily used to be in this karaoke group that we would go out on like Sunday or something, Sundays or Mondays or something, like Brass Monkey or Sardos or something. And you sang under the name Duffy, which I could never figure out. Was that...
That's my brother.
Oh, that's your brother.
Yeah, I just like that name. I don't know why I did it, but that's, I just like that name.
That's cool. That's awesome.
What was your song?
My main one was probably the Macy Gray.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, it's fun and, you know. Yeah,
that's great.
Probably.
We had a good karaoke run
sure
for a
did.
While, and then everyone grew up.
Yeah, they did.
What's your go-to?
My go-to?
Yeah.
I don't know. It was not Winger. It was Zeppelin
it was
for
Warren.
A while.
It was Warren.
You know, it really was sad now that I think about it. We would go every week and sing the same songs over and over again.
I know.
Never really stepped outside our wheelhouse. It was just like...
You don't want to embarrass yourself.
A lot of pressure.
Hey, guys, I'm really good at this song. I don't know.
I have my go-to.
What's yours?
You Gotta Be by Desiree.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Do you have one, Ron? You don't seem like a karaoke guy.
I have done it in the past. I can never remember my go-to. That's the problem with karaoke is it takes half an hour to remember the song that you know the words to.
Yep. They put them up on the screen for you, though.
I realized, though, that's not – I was like, I kind of know the song. I got it. Turns out I don't really know much about any song. And it's always the worst. And you're always just going through going, I wish they had it by artist. You know, the books are always
totally,
what you need.
Totally.
Someone has an excuse.
I don't even know why they have books anymore. Everything is streaming. Like, you could just – boy, in our day of karaoke, really, you had to
Someone
look through a book.
Crank the wheel and yep. the projected light through the little
– You had to stand inside a zoetrope?
And that dinosaur bird would put his beak down, and that's how you'd hear the music.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. It's changed a lot.
You also pulls tail when it was time
it's
to
a
stop.
Living.
Yep. It's also changed a lot. So these are my personal connections, my somewhat personal connections to all of you. We can certainly talk about The Conjuring, but first, I want to talk to you for a second about – are you doing a MacGyver movie? Is that happening?
Oh, my God.
Please. Oh, man. I think I was.
Oh,
yeah.
That was future past.
Yes. That was a project I was very passionate about, but then something came along, and I think MacGyver has now been pushed aside. It's now kind of. I think.
Couldn't you using whatever tools you could find in the pitch room put it together and save the MacGyver room because that feels appropriate?
No, just because the next gig I'm on is going to take up so much of my time and I don't have time to spend on it.
Would that be the seventh sequel to Fast and Furious?
That could possibly be it. Yes.
Yes.
Interesting.
Listen, we wouldn't be mad at you with a MacGyver cameo in that. I'd be like, about time.
But I think James maintains that. The Jigsaw Killer is basically like Dark MacGyver.
I joke about that. I joke that you know, when people were like, why is James doing MacGyver? It doesn't make sense. I'm like, well, look at it. I built an entire horror movie villain franchise around my love for MacGyver. And I do. I love that character. I grew up with MacGyver, and I despise the fact that he has now become somewhat of a joke to a lot of people, and I wanted to... reboot MacGyver and do like a kind of, you know, like a fun but yet serious take on the guy, and my version would be slightly a bit different to the TV version.
So he's the bad guy. The Phoenix Foundation goes after him, right? Come on,
he's the bad guy.
Well, I'm making your version. He's the villain. The Phoenix Foundation has to go after him.
Yeah, he's sort of like a born, like he's sort of like a born identity. Maybe MacGyver is like a born identity thing. And there are a bunch of different...
Just make a Bourne sequel.
Just a Bourne sequel.
That's all we want.
No. But no. Okay, I guess I can talk about it now since I'm not doing it. But my version was I really wanted to embrace a really geeky, nerdy action hero. And that's who he was going to be in my version. He was going to be an MIT dropout. He was supposed to be a guy who's really like dulling into all these tech nerdy stuff that we all love, but he uses these low tech approach to fight against these very high tech terrorists.
I love it.
I think MacGyver was essentially the closest thing to an American version of the Doctor from Doctor Who that we had.
Really? Basically, yeah. And he was
Where's
more of
the time
a Boy
travel?
Scout.
Well, okay, there's a big piece of that.
He's in know-how? Some gumption?
He's making it out of gum.
I just want to see in the next Fast and the Furious, Vin Diesel wakes up in a junkyard with a bear trap on his head. And he's like, you know why you're here. You have to incorporate some type of horror element. To the next Fast and the Furious movie.
Yep, we'll see.
All right, good.
Jason Statham has been Saw the whole time. He's been Jigsaw.
That'd be awesome. So, Ron, how did you guys get involved with the movie? Did you know James before, or what was the? How did you guys get in?
Ron didn't know of me, but I'm such a big fan of Ron and Lily's work, and so that was how I kind of I pushed in that direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, anytime that something comes to you and you know, I'd seen Insidious, so I already saw what James and Patrick were up to, and I thought it was great. I thought it, especially all the kind of Hitchcock elements that nobody had really been doing that suspense stuff for a while. I feel like the pace of the genre has just gotten faster and brighter and louder and a little more shock to it. And this flipped it on its ear and went back to like just a really slow, and then as terrifying, you know, as you could be with just painting a guy's face red. I was like, this is going to be really great.
Well, it was kind of fun because it almost seemed like, all right, I did Saw. Now I'm going to do the exact opposite kind of suspense movie.
Right.
And so for you as a director, even though you've done a lot of horror, obviously you don't just do that. But is that sort of how you go, well, I've done this kind of subgenre and this subgenre. Is it just for you just sort of playing around with the palette of horror stuff?
I think over the years, people have kind of lumped the sequel, the Saw sequel of the first one. With the first Saw film, I was such a huge fan of like the suspense. I think even from my very first movie, I'm a big fan of tension and suspense. And I've always said the first movie actually isn't a very gory movie at all. I mean, I played so much of it off camera. And so when I became known as the grandfather of torture porn, there was a part of me that thought, yeah, this is kind of cool. But then there was another part of me that kind of really disliked it as well. So I kind of had this love-hate relationship with that label because I felt it really pigeonholed me and put me in a box that I wasn't comfortable with. I felt that that I was, you know, as a filmmaker, I was more than just that. And I really dislike it when, you know, lazy journalism would just use that as a derivative way to kind of put, you know, my work down or whatever, right? And so I really made a very conscious decision to, try to get out of it, to go make a little action film. You know, not many people saw that, despite the fact that I really love making it. So I was still known as the horror guy. And so I thought, well, since I'm known as the scary movie guy, I thought I'll do something that's different to what everyone expect of me. And that's why I went back to a classic haunted house ghost story.
It's interesting that just what can happen with the unintentional results. Like when you do one thing and then people go, "Bup, that's your thing." And you go, "No, it was just the thing that I did." People must quote the shit out of Office Space to you all the time.
Still. Yeah, it's not terrible, you know. Like, it's kind of great. You throw the touchdown in the state championship game, and all the rest of your life, people are like, "I remember that touchdown." Right. You know, it's like there are worse things in the world.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. Exactly.
But I think I think sometimes it's not only a disservice to, but people forget the nuances of the thing itself. You know. And it's fun to grow and change and try different things.
You know, I saw a tweet from Scott Derrickson that I thought was really cool. He said that a lot of today's sort of, you know, upcoming filmmakers or actors, actresses, right, are afraid of being typecast. But typecasting is just a way of being branded, and having a brand is not a bad thing at all. And so I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. That's a good way of looking at it.
Well, it's not, but I think also in people's minds and the audience's minds, especially now with the amount of data that we're asked to process, that people just have room for a one-dimensional image of something. Where they'll go, that's that guy. That's that movie. That's what he does. That's it. You know, and someone really has to make the effort to deep dive and go, oh, there's so many. I mean, it's more rewarding when you do.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's part of the society we live in right now, which is, you know, everything, especially in making movies in Hollywood, right? It's all about seeing what's on the surface and kind of go, okay, so you do that really well. We think that's all you're really good at. But you know, then it's up to you as an artist to try and prove that you can do more than that. And I think part of that challenge is cool. Wouldn't you say?
No, I think in general, we just get information faster and we're making faster snap judgments on things.
Right.
You know, it used to be you'd wait for Dan Rather to tell you what's going on, and now you've got the crawl and the graphic and, you know, three talking heads. And you're just grabbing.
Now you get anonymous on Twitter telling you stuff happening in real time.
Yeah. Well, because we're all of the age where we had a good chunk of our lives with no interconnectivity, and now on the other side as well, And obviously, for the most part, I think, you know, it's better. It's better that we're all. But there's definitely some of those times where you go, boy, wouldn't it have been great to just make a thing and then you never hear about it again from people and then move on to the next thing?
I mean, I think it's where you really see it is the problem is it infects the whole genre where people now, when they go see a horror movie, they're like, well, I already know what it's going to be. I know what's going to happen. Like, I don't even want to see a movie that's not based on a TV show where I already know all the characters. I know their names. I know what the plot's going to be, and I know how it's going to end. And you lose something by that. You lose the element of surprise, and I'm going to sit down in a theater, and I don't know what's going to happen.
Exactly why I didn't see Lincoln.
Yeah, because you knew the end.
Spoiler alert, he dies.
Right.
Sorry, you guys.
Did you watch Titanic and go, don't tell me what happens at the end?
Inglorious Bastards, on the other
hand. There you go.
Yeah. You didn't see that one coming.
You think you know.
No, with Titanic, it's just like, get to the end. Right. I just want to see the fucking ship break in half. Blah, blah, blah. He loves her. He drew a picture of her naked. Fine. Down goes the band. And really, that movie... it was just all about the last 10 minutes, like all the setup. It was one of the genius things about it. It was just like, oh, you know it's coming the entire time. That's great. Lily, what do you, since you've, when was your first movie? 80?
Yeah, 80, Mystic Pizza 80. I wasn't drinking age, so I was getting it from other people, 19 or something.
Now, can you be convicted of a crime for admitting that on a podcast?
Well, Connecticut does have the blue laws, so maybe you might.
Maybe.
Is that you're from Connecticut?
No, but that's Mystic.
Oh, that's where Mystic Pizza was in Connecticut. Yeah, yeah. Sorry. Well, I don't know if it necessarily shot. No, Matt, because just because a movie says it's in a town doesn't mean it shoots in that town.
I'm sure they did shoot in Connecticut. Yeah, I know.
You shot in Connecticut?
Yeah.
In Mystic,
God damn it. All right, fine. You're from Chicago, right? Did you grow up in the...
suburbs.
You grew up in the suburbs?
Yeah.
Chicago has an amazing theater culture. Were you part of that?
Yeah, the Pivens. I mean, like, you know, Steppenwolf, they were a little older than us.
Yeah.
And so sort of missed that boat. But the Pivens, you know, were just like totally nurtured. And they were my family.
Would you have been happy, do you think, just to stay in Chicago and do theater the whole time?
Well, except I got my equity card at 19, and the union was sort of tough, and they told me they'd take my card away if I was caught doing non-union stuff. And there was 120 non-union houses and 20 union, and all the good stuff was non-union. So I was like, fuck you, and I had to go to New York because the equity's not as strict there. So that's why I left Chicago, was because for the theater.
Oh, wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when you got to New York, what happened? What did you start?
Richard Foreman play. I did a play. He's one of the avant-garde guys, Richard Foreman. Wooster Group came after Richard Foreman, and it was the perfect way to go in.
Yeah.
With a really out there play. It was perfect. It was just perfect with a little bit of money in my pocket. You know what I mean?
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
And then, so when you started working in film, did you miss theater at all? Because it's just such a different...
I do both. And that's why I went to New York. Because you can do, you know, if you make a little bit of money on the film or do a voiceover, then you can do your theater. So I would do theater, film.
You have an amazing voice.
Thanks.
What was your...
Let the word out. I just lost a little voiceover contract.
So you what?
Yeah, it's all right. It's okay.
Who do we have to go after?
Liberty Mutual.
Oh, shit. No, don't say it. Now you're doing it.
but Paul Giamatti got it, and Paul's great. Oh, that's all right. Good friends.
Did you lose another job to Paul Giamatti? I mean, you guys.
Scalping.
You were this close to John Adams, and that fucking guy swoops in and takes it again. Oh, you're actually not male. I love that you didn't hesitate to go with Liberty Mutual. Like, well, I don't know if I should. We need to find a rival financial institution and then put you on top of that.
State Farm? I don't know.
Allstate?
Allstate? Oh, that other guy has it.
That 24 guy, the president of 24.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, what's his name?
Because of the D.
David, right?
David, yeah, something. I forget.
Yeah, the guy who was in it was the military show that was really popular.
24?
Not just 24.
No, he then went over to some sort of NCIS, CSI.
Yes, one of those.
Jack situation.
Oh, that guy.
Look at us.
One of those things. CBS.
I remember. We don't need to remember things anymore, you guys. We carry an external hard drive with us that has all of the sum
exactly.
total of human information.
Unlike the Memory Palace.
We don't.
That's right.
We don't ever have to remember anything ever again. Does
we
it
don't.
Freak you out?
Yes. Did you hear about that book, Walking with Einstein? Just about memory and how our memories change. He started out because he realized it's all in a hard drive now. And so what's happening to our memories? So he went back to the Greeks because they memorized everything because the hard drive was in the brain.
Right.
And it's really great, actually. It's deep. It's not just like there's because memory is who we are. It's anyways, I love the book.
Please, keep going.
That Walking with Einstein. It's fantastic.
I wonder what that real estate in our brains is being used for now since we're not memorizing anything anymore.
Porn. Just waiting.
Lots of porn.
Lots of porn, do you think?
I'm kidding.
Literally, I almost said the exact same thing.
Yeah.
It's just memorizing porn websites.
Yeah, well,
why do you
right.
Memorize porn websites?
Which is private browsing, buddy. You don't want that in your history.
Which is a drag because it's like data takes up a lot more megabytes in the as opposed to if it was just words, text isn't as much as images, so it's a real drag because then you're really like lost some space.
Do you like technology? Are you a technology person? Oh, you do?
Yeah.
What's your favorite gadget or device?
Well, you know, like, I mean, I'm an Apple girl, I'm a Mac girl, so, you know, like, I guess my iPhone right now, but.
Is there anything in particular, is there a device that you wish you had?
No, not really. Not really.
Do you feel like we have everything we need at
kind
this
of,
point?
Kind of. It's
well, that's
like apps.
How everybody
I mean,
felt
I want apps, maybe.
History,
I guess I want more content as opposed to hardware.
Right.
Like, there's more things I'm interested in content-wise, but hardware, like, yeah, maybe like a better like microphone for the app, for the iPhone, but...
We're maxed on hardware at this point. Now it's really just about what do we put in that
Yeah,
hardware.
Probably, right?
Well, I mean, there's the fantasy aspect of hardware that we could possibly have.
Oh,
futuristic hardware.
Like fetishistic stuff?
No, I think he means...
No, I meant like
instead of a lightsaber, you mean a light dildo.
With Liberty, with Liberty Mutual. Like, you just go right into Liberty Mutual.
Fetishistic.
You mean fantasy, like sci-fi fantasy. You mean
sci-fi.
Fantasy isn't like
I'm tied up in being tickled by
ostrich feathers.
Like, whatever.
I'm sorry, emu feathers in deference.
I'm going to show Code the Nerdist. I'm talking about like time traveling. I'm talking about like teleportation device, that kind of stuff.
Like,
just
because that'd be cool.
The Phantom Toll Booth, like going in.
Real holographic, like most.
Yeah,
Isaac,
I think that'd be awesome, right?
A holodeck is all you need, really. Just one holodeck.
Even 3D printing is going to be pretty big. I mean, that's we have
3D
that
printing
that's
is so scary.
That's yeah, the guy that made the gun.
The guy who made the gun. That's I'm like, insane. Oh my god, he can make anything.
It wasn't a very good gun.
It was made
not
from
a very
sugar.
Good gun.
But it was like their second try.
I mean, you can make a better gun out of like a door lock.
Some of the medicine stuff that like someone, a doctor saved a little kid's life with a little valve they made from a 3D printer that he could only have made from a 3D printer. So the gun thing, like when I'm reading more of this great stuff that's happening,
I know.
The gun, like I think...
It balances it out.
Aren't they trying to like 3D print food too?
Yes.
They're trying to 3D print everything. 3D print structures, 3D print
Because you're using ingredients instead of whatever else they use.
That's
and so like
right,
you use
right.
icing and sugar and stuff
that's
like
exactly
that.
That's exactly how the replicator works on the Enterprise. You're welcome.
Just wait till they start 3D printing 3D printers.
Oh shit!
That just blew my mind.
That's Terminator shit.
We're going to be overrun by printers.
Yes, Terminators come. They were basically sentient 3D printers that just started replicating themselves.
That's a total line to a movie. We're being overrun by printers. That's fantastic. Can you imagine all these printers?
Printnado.
Yeah, Printnado.
It's a tornado that picks up all the printers
and then just replicates itself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just pitched it to Sci-Fi. Robot.
No, really.
Very good.
I think they'll totally.
It comes out tomorrow night. We've already made it.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
With some shadow
actually,
puppets.
They're just about finished principal photography.
Yeah, that's good. Oh, it's blowing up on Twitter. So many ironic views. They say the most ironic views out of any movie.
Oh, beat Liz and Dick.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Sharknado did not get that many ironic views. I don't think that
it killed.
Watch it. It did not kill.
It did not.
It didn't.
Oh,
I thought it did.
No. They were.
It got a lot of social network.
That's what they
response.
Were saying. That they were like, it's really big on social media.
It did
but
transfer across. Yeah.
It's more like a water cooler thing as opposed to sitting through it, right?
Yeah.
Well,
it's one of those things where you hear the concept and you go, ah! Yeah. Then you're like, I'm not going to give 2 hours of my
life.
Exactly.
I want them to make a
I did.
Did you? Did you watch Sharknado?
I did. I watched it because, okay, I got a little story here because I was being interviewed by the director of the film to actually talk about The Conjuring. I really like the guy, right? And he was telling me about the movie that he was about. He's been direct because I was a while ago when I met him, he was finishing up a movie and then he's starting another one. So I asked him what was his latest one that he was working on. And he said, well, it's this movie for Sci-Fi called Sharknado. And I just went, oh my God, that is brilliant. I'm like, when that comes out, it's going to be huge. And sure enough, it was.
On social media.
On social media, yes.
But unfortunately,
but that was really cool. And you know, and it's
show me.
See the name.
On show me. Yeah. Yeah, it's on show me. It's on show me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm. Come on, man, get with the lingo.
I know, right.
So was it literally just a tornado made of sharks?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Wow. Yes. It literally is what it sounds.
I want to give it a shot.
but the fact that Tara Reid and Ian Ziering was in it, that was pretty cool. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's like most of their movies were combining animals, right?
Yeah.
Like they had a lot of like combining animals, right. And now they just had to combine an animal with a natural disaster.
Right. Mammoth quake. The earthquake made a mammoth. So I just made that one up, but it's going to be really big.
Yeah.
A slothalips. Slothalips. Cheatastrophe.
Slothalips.
Slowest moving death.
It just. It moves so agonizingly slow that you fucking kill yourself. Yeah. You can't.
No. It's like the apocalypse eventually catches up to it.
Yeah.
The whole time it's like Michael McDonald and Austin Powers with the steamroller.
Did you just say gorilla cane?
Gorilla cane.
The hurricane made of gorillas?
Yes.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. So you go to the eye of the gorilla cane and you think you're safe, but then it's
so many gorillas.
More
so many.
I don't know, man. That sounds a bit derivative. I don't know. Too similar to Sharknado. I don't know.
No.
We've been there, done that.
No, it's gorillas.
Gorillas,
It's a whole separate animal tree. Primate, man.
Wait. We're talking about freedom fighters? Is that what
you're saying? You know someone would pitch that and be like, okay, look,
it's
a
not
tornado.
Gorilla, it's gorillas.
Yeah. And a tornado is just like touches one place, but a hurricane.
This is a scene sweat out of Captain Ron. Do you guys remember Captain Ron?
Yes, of course.
He goes, watch out for gorillas. And he walks and he gets hijacked and he gets like Martin Short, I think. It's Martin Short,
it's
right?
Martin Short, yeah.
Yeah, and he gets hijacked, comes back. He goes, you said gorilla. You didn't say gorilla. Big difference.
That's Kurt Russell, right?
Kurt Russell.
He was Captain Ron.
He was Captain Ron.
Yeah.
Classic.
Fucking love that.
Who's the dad now? Was that Charles Grodin? I want to say Charles Grodin.
Let's just say that it was, and then let the internet correct us. It should have been Charles Grodin. Everything. Have you ever worked with Charles Grodin?
I love Charles Grodin. I've never met him. I've never gotten to work with him. But
do you have a favorite Charles Grodin film?
Heartbreak Kid.
Rosemary's Baby.
Oh,
Rosemary's Baby.
Real Life.
Real Life is pretty fucking great.
Yeah.
The Albert Brooks movie.
He's pretty great in Ishtar, too.
He's pretty great in everything.
He's great in everything.
I'm sorry, what'd you...
Ishtar.
sorry. What was
was the one with Steve Martin?
Which is actually pretty good.
With Steve Martin, the one where
he... Oh, the Lonely Guy?
The Lonely Guy.
The Lonely Guy is great,
I love The Lonely Guy.
He's in Dave. I forgot he was in Dave.
Why didn't we all just say Beethoven second?
No.
Ishtar, I don't think Ishtar...
You say, this guy, he's saying what's on my mind, I'm saying what's on his mind.
I don't think Ishtar was as bad as people...
Ishtar's a better movie than it gets credit.
I think what happened
really funny.
That was the thing, is that it was... Supposed to be, it was like, you know, a post Tootsie Dustin Hoffman Warren. It was supposed to be a huge
post Tootsie,
and then
it was the errors of humanity.
Well, I mean, just taking some of the biggest box office movies, and then sort of putting like taking people from those, and it was supposed to be huge, and it didn't do great. I think by today's standards, it probably actually did okay.
Yeah, I mean,
what would you compare to
today's
to like a movie from today?
What, Ishtar?
Yeah, Ishtar. Like, in terms of, it was kind of badly perceived back then, but when you look back at it, it wasn't too bad, you know, financially.
It was one of those movies where it was expensive. Right. So before they even finished shooting, everybody was piling on what a bomb it was going to be.
Which is what they were doing with Titanic before it came out. They were like, this thing's going to lose so much money.
Right.
And then it made all of
the money. All the money. There was no money left.
There was nothing. Yeah.
And then Cameron was like, $1 billion, I'll do that again.
I guess the show did not bet against Cameron.
Yeah. If we take away anything from today, guys, don't bet against James Cameron.
Yes, that's right.
And as a director, is that sort of fun to watch where everyone's like, you're going to fail, you're going to fail. Oh, you just made $1 billion. Is it sort of like... Does it teach you anything in terms of stick to your vision, stick to what you want to do?
Yeah, no, I think it definitely does. You know, you need to have your conviction and stand by it. I think, filmmaking is really hard. But I also believe in being responsible as well. I think, I think budget in today's sort of filmmaking climax is getting kind of out of control. And I, as I say, as I move into a very, very big film, but I think, but that's something I'm very mindful of.
Well, I think it's very easy to say like, oh, why don't people just make, $5 million movies and then, and they go, well,
Because you can't really make a $5 million movie. You make a $5 million movie just for the movie, and then it's $25 million to market the thing.
Right, right.
So it's actually a $30 million movie, which then, you know, like, it's actually a much more complicated business than I think people realize.
Yeah, yeah.
And no, people spend $100 and $150 million because that's really the that's up in the ether where you can stand to make shit tons of money.
Right, I mean, people don't realize that to market a big film these days, it costs between $50 to $100 million just to market a film on its own. It's insane.
Where does that money go?
Bus ads. That's it.
Does it go to bus ads?
It all goes to bus ads.
I mean, some of it must go to bus ads, but I can never figure out.
It goes to those banners above your social media Facebook
page.
Yeah,
no. TV commercials.
The TV commercials?
No, it's more than that. It's more than that. It's, I mean, it's, you know, doing shows like. Like this one. No.
This costs
wait, what?
$25 million. What's the one thing that you learned about the business side of the film? Like, you're a director, you want to just create things, but what's right. the businessy stuff that you had to learn along the way that maybe is that you like or you don't like?
I think the biggest learning curve I've learned from when I started this 10 years ago is that. But directing, it's not just filmmaking. So much of it is politics. Politics plays such a big part on the films you get, how you get your films, how it gets marketed, you know, who believes in it, how it gets championed, all that kind of stuff. It's kind of knowing how that whole world works with how far you can kind of like progress your career. I mean, like, it's kind of sad to say that talent on its own is kind of not enough.
Yes!
You kind of need to understand how the business works, and you know, it's I hate to refer to this, but it's true. It's called show business.
I guess that's true.
It's not called show, right?
That would be really weird if it were called that.
It would be strange.
It sounds like a Japanese TV show. Show.
It'd be longer. Like... No, it'd be longer than that. happy show, bright.
How that was almost a Ren and Stimpy reference.
It was.
You were like a half a centimeter away from a Ren and Stimpy reference.
I'm a big Stimpy fan.
Ren and Stimpy fan?
Yes.
Did you get it? You're from Perth, right?
I'm from Australia, yes.
But you're not from... You're from.
I did. I grew up in Perth, yes.
Just isolated way out on the West Coast.
It is. Huh. You know your geography in Australia.
I do know. I've been to Australia before.
Yeah,
I know that
yeah.
the center that Australia is essentially a cultural donut. Nothing inhabits the center of the continent.
You mean physically, geographically a donut?
Yeah.
You mean, yeah.
It's like a donut.
Not philosophically a donut.
No.
It doesn't suck you in. There isn't a hole missing in the middle of the planet.
that hole is New Zealand. It's the donut hole. On the
philosophically, Australia.
You get it for free when you get Australia.
It is a donut. It's a delicious place. It's sweet.
It's
the people are nice.
It's cool. Australia's great.
Oh. Did you grow up in? So you grew up a little bit.
I grew up in Australia, and then you know, in my younger years, and then I moved to the eastern states. You know, where I went to. Not many people know this, but the capital city of Australia is not Sydney.
It's Canberra.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Good stuff. Mm-hmm. Good.
So what do I win?
You win my admiration.
An Aussie flag or some type? Do I get the? And I also know that the two animals on the Australian flag, the emu and the kangaroo, because neither one of those can go backwards.
That just blew my mind.
Wow.
You didn't know that?
Blew my mind.
That the animals can never... I think they're on... Well, they're not on the flag, like, has basically
They're on the coat of arms.
They're on the coat of arms. Yeah, the flag is the constellation. But
the emu and the kangaroo, yes.
But those two animals were picked not only because they're indigenous, but also they lack the ability to go backwards, which says that Australia is constantly moving forward.
That's great.
Isn't that nice?
But aren't
they
a lot of
animals? If they run into each other, they're just stuck.
Yes, stuck.
Looking at each other.
then it's just a stare-off story.
They can't turn around each other.
The center of Australia
either.
Is right. filled with emu.
Then they're just
staring at kangaroos.
They're just emu, kangaroo. Good to see you.
Can I ask
you too.
Can a cow move backwards?
I think maybe it can move backwards a little bit. I don't know if it's great for a
not
coat of
fast
arms.
Enough, which is why we have delicious steak.
You like that ribeye? It's amazing. I went to school in Canberra as well. I went to high school in Canberra, and then I went down to Melbourne for university, and that was where I met my my buddy Lee Winnell. And when we were in film school, we never did the things that we were asked to do. All we wanted to do was make genre films, make a little scary movie, a little sci-fi robot films, which they were pretty crap, but they were fun to do. And you know, during those period, we wrote our first script, which was Saw.
You're pretty much like the Maverick and Goose of.
Oh no! Which one's Goose?
Yeah, well, which one?
I don't know. Goose? Well, Lee's not here, so we'll make him Goose.
Oh,
what? That's kind of shitty.
Goose Why? Dies.
It's just kind of mean. He's not here to defend himself to be Goose.
Well, but he was married to
Goose dies, and then he starts bleeding green, so you find out he's a robot.
Oh,
that's what I took away
that's
from
what
it.
That was?
It's not transmission fluid from the jet.
So obviously, as a film, as a director, as a writer, you know, you can. You can always be doing something, even if you're not actually shooting a film. You can be writing a film. You can be, as actors, do you ever feel like, oh.
Yeah, it's called theater. Oh, I'm sorry, guys. Oh.
No, theater's great, but it's not like you can just go act if you feel like.
Oh, it's awful. Yeah, when you're not working.
But you still have the thing. You
of
still
course,
want to do stuff all the
when
time.
When creative energy goes back, we talk about going backwards. It's like one of the worst things when it backs up on you and it doesn't have a forward motion. It's awful.
I kind
of
like it. I like free time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's I have a slower fuse for it. So I think 6 months have to go by before I start getting antsy. My wife's different. I think my wife's like you. She's. Couple
I like free
of,
time, just not more than a year or two.
Yeah.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah.
Well, that's a lot.
No, I love free time, but I think that it's for me it's harder. Yeah, it's like, hey, want to go act?
Yeah.
Let's go act together. No, it doesn't work like you can't. There's not much you can do, so you have to find other ways to be creative. That's all. So you have to get inventive.
Yeah, and you've done both of you. You've done all types of movies: small indie films, big budget films. Is there a fundamental difference that makes you like one or the other more?
Well, yeah, but I think James is a perfect example for like you can have a lot of money and you can still be an auteur. It was like an independent movie working on The Conjuring, and yet it was $20
million.
Right. So Craft Services was better.
Yeah, but like it doesn't matter. It really if the person in charge is creative, it doesn't matter. And collaborative. The problem with the big movies is the lines of demarcation start getting strong, and there's a lack of collaborativeness that happens.
You get a lot of cooks from the money people,
right?
Because there's more money at stake. So you have a lot of suits kind of sitting around the monitor, and they have all the time in the world to get it the really bad way that they want it. So you'll end up there. On a small movie with no money, there's a lot more trust in you to just – because we're only going to get two or three takes, so yeah. It's you do it kind of.
But they could have been on
way.
James. But I feel like James knows how to. I'm talking about you in the third person. I feel like he knows how to protect himself. He surrounds himself with just the right money people. Rob Cohen, I thought, was a fantastic producer.
He was a great
producer. Totally
yes.
Had James's back. I had no idea Rob was working for New Line. He was so good. I thought he was independent. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I didn't know he was
right.
From a studio.
Yeah.
And I think James is. I just think. I think I'm so excited to see what James does because I think he's going to just keep proving all these things wrong. Fast and Furious can be deep. Do you know who knew it could have emotional depth? You know, who knew that you could have that much money and still like even Terry Gilliam fell into problems with Baron Munchausen.
Right.
He even said, "Oh, it was so much better when I just had coconuts for spaceships."
Yes.
You know, but Baron Munchausen, you could see Terry. He just he got into such
I
a.
I still
blah.
Love that movie so
great.
Much.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great, but you could see there was times when I felt the money sort of.
Weighed it down.
That's such an interesting idea too, because yeah, I mean, he spent so much of his early career, the majority of the early part of his life, just having to work under these incredible budget constraints. And then, so what do you do when someone's like, "Here's $100 million"?
Right.
Like, it's almost—I mean, it does. It sort of weirdly hampers creativity, don't you think?
Totally. Unless, like, I feel like you know how you're going to spend the money, and you're going to be like, you know what? I really don't need. That extra. So just take that and put that somewhere else because...
Right. I mean, I hope so because, I mean, a lot of times these big films, they come with their own process, right? I mean, they come with like, you know, especially going into something like this one, it's such an established world already that I'm coming to play in. And so hopefully, you know, I can get in there and do my thing as well.
Which they seemed to hire you for, right?
Right. I mean, you like to think that's the case. But you know, but that's part of the fun. I think that's part of the challenge as well. You know, knowing to kind of how to navigate that world. But Lily is right with Conjuring. We were very fortunate to have a studio that really believed in us. You know, really believed in us and let us kind of make the film we wanted to make. But having said that, they were very involved from a creative standpoint as well. And like, I gotta say, like, the notes I would get and the ideas that I would get, they would never force it on me, but they would just pass it on to me, like, just fellow collaborators. And they were really good. They were, like, really good stuff. I know this sounds, you know, it sounds like I'm doing my EPK. I'm not. I've been through sort of, like, tough filmmaking experiences as well. This is not one of them. And I think the final product kind of shows, you know, that that we had the studio resources to back us up, but yet we also had the independence or creativity, you know, like you would have on an indie movie, mm-hmm. On this film as well. So
it's a great blend of both high tech and low tech. I mean, the high tech is there when we needed it,
right?
The crane's there when we needed it, but it's like the old school sort of practical effects stuff, great. And the Texas switch stunt work.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of stuff. It's fun.
Everybody yeah. loves
no,
it.
No, we had know? The best of both worlds awesome. On that wait. Film, on this film.
And you work with a lot of really great actors besides these guys, like Patrick Wilson, who's fucking awesome.
Yeah, I love Patrick.
And Vera, whose last name I can never pronounce. Is it Famiga? Famiga.
Oh, right.
I didn't know that. right. I thought it was Farmiga, but thank you.
I put the
Famiga.
R in there, but yeah.
I think it's. I could be wrong. I don't know.
Vera.
We just call her Vera. Yeah.
Hey, it's Vera, Vera F. You're like, you're just trying to Vera. Dodge whenever she comes right. in.
Oh,
it's this lady. You no, are good.
I gotta say, you know, like I'm extremely fortunate with The Conjuring, you know, to have gotten such great actors like these guys and Patrick and Vera, you know, besides Ron and Lily as well. Because, you know, as a director, you know, Spielberg said it best. He said that half your directing is done by who you cast in your film. And so I felt that that, you know, like I had such great actors with me on this movie and you know, and having their input when we were filming as well just really elevate the movie to a different level. You know, and I've been seeing it, you know, in reactions right now. What, you know, if people have issues with the movie, one of the things they would definitely not have issues with the film is the performances in the film. And that was all across the board, even down to the little kids that we have in the film as well. The little girls were amazing. Oh, did you guys not say?
Yeah. Especially yeah. the little girl who, I mean, obviously I don't want to give too much away, but there's the one little girl, like the first time she sees, she's the one that wakes up.
Right. Joey King.
She was brilliant. Awesome.
Joey's fantastic. Amazing. Yes. Yeah. yeah.
She's huge. I mean, she has like 2 million, like 200,000 Twitter. She's huge.
She's great already.
She's fantastic.
Yeah, I remember when she started following me. I'm like, oh my god, you have way more followers
than I do. She has
200,000
followers. She's fantastic. But she's what's great about
so
Joey
me.
Is she really
so me.
So on SoMe.
On SoMe. She's got 200,000 twit SoMe's.
She's but she's really cares about acting. That's why she's gonna be fine.
Yeah,
you know, she's,
but she's
her.
Also what I love about her is she's really great, you know, in terms of an actor. But she's just a kid still, right?
Yeah.
And I think you know that's testament to the parents as well, you know, for keeping her a child and,
totally.
And you know, enjoying you know what it's like to still be a kid. So
let's hope. I got my fingers crossed. Like, take care of yourself.
This is a conversation
Charlie,
someone had on the set of The Parent Trap.
Oh my goodness.
Wow. Yeah.
Listen, she'll be fine as long as her parents are stable. Oh shit. Oh no. It's kind of a fucked up. Young people acting, it's so much that, like, you just keep your fingers crossed that the parents are cool right. and not right. psychopaths who put their kids right. in the entertainment business.
Yeah.
Well, and the parents, I think they really have to have a good boundary for everybody else because it's everybody else that comes in and sees the dollar signs and wants to kind of bleed the kids dry.
Yeah.
Like, the parents have to be really good at saying, no, you know, we're done. Get away from my kid.
Who was it? I was just heard something on Reddit. I think maybe it was the actor Jackie Coogan. That he had earned,
yes,
like $68 million, and his mother spent it. I don't know how back then you spend $68 million. I mean, that's got to be worth like $300 or $400 million now.
She was just enacting Brewster's million. She was like,
but she spent it all. She basically spent it all on his 21st birthday, and on his 21st birthday, or when he got older, or whatever. She was like, yeah, you weren't supposed to get that money. I'm your parent. I take the money. Now you're an adult. You can go make whatever money you want.
Right, but because of that particular incident, right, a new law was introduced.
Yes.
The law was introduced, right, that became that protected the kids, that the parents have to put a certain amount of money aside for the kids for when they grow up. They can use that.
Right.
One for you, 10 million.
Right, you're me.
Two for you,
20 million for me.
Three for you. Would you want your kids? Do you have kids, Lily?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have kids too, right?
I have a 10-week-old daughter.
Oh, wow.
Oh, shit.
Yes.
You're going to put her in a movie?
Probably not.
No. You don't look nearly as tired as you should.
Yeah, you really don't.
The coffee.
I'm actually curious, you know, what would you guys do when your kids come up to you and say, Mom, Dad, I want to act? Be movies.
Well, if they're speaking, then you've already waited a little bit of time. I don't know. I mean, I think it's like any other full-time job, because it can be a full-time job, and
right.
There's a lot of hours to it. I don't know. I think there's – if you want to act, there's school plays to be in, right. And there's – you know.
Right, because I mean, you know, it's really fascinating for me because, you know, you guys are very successful at what you do, but you guys have seen how hard it is to get here as well. It's not, you know, it's not easy, and so it's kind of you have that mindset, you know, you have that sort of, you know, you see the upside and then you see the downside as well. And
I think the weird thing about a child acting career is it sort of goes out the window when you become an adult. Anyway, you have to throw that career and then maybe you can start a new one as an adult.
Right. That's true.
So I feel like if you have to start a new one as an adult anyway, you might as well
just start as an adult.
Yeah, starting as an adult and have, you know, I mean, again, there's exceptions in there, like Ron Howard. There's people who just have,
right,
you know, great experiences.
Yeah, whatever happened to that guy?
You know, are really well adjusted and
that's true.
And
yes.
And Joey seems like she's going there. I know all the girls, but it's a scary thing. I don't think personally I wouldn't bite it off.
No. What about you?
You know, it's like whatever desire she has, but I would definitely say, like, when you're 18, you can then get an agent. Until 18, you cannot get an agent. You cannot, you know, if anything happens, great, but I would say probably no.
You're because who needs thing, to like be in that plays system? And stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, like, I mean, my parents were like, sure, go audition for Bad News Bears. Which was fantastic.
Right? You auditioned for Bad News Bears?
You bet I did, man.
Holy shit.
Shit, I brought my mitt in. I was like,
for Tatum O'Neill? For the role
of
Tatum O'Neill?
Yeah. I mean, even though she's probably cast, they were like, don't tell this little girl that she's already cast. But yeah, and like, I mean, I had like a little scene with Gary Coleman and a little commercial. I wouldn't trade that for anything.
What was your thing with
Gary Coleman?
Yeah.
It was for Liberty Mutual.
It's awful. It's for cornbread commercial.
What?
Bad.
Oh, very shit.
Bad.
Oh, my God. And you were in this
but
commercial?
He didn't believe I was a girl because I looked like a boy because I was a tomboy. So he was trying to take my shirt off. We were physical.
Oh,
it was just,
of course
it
was.
It's a moth
Are
story.
You sure?
It's
that...
a moth story. I'm telling you. My next moth story.
Oh, for
really,
the moth. Yeah.
Yeah, for the moth. I've already done one. I'm going to do more. Yeah, I think it's Gary Coleman. I think you got it.
Sponsored by
okay?
Liberty Mutual.
I also like the idea that cornbread needed a commercial.
Well, honey, on so many levels. And, like, he was so sick of cornbread, he would take these breaks. Obviously, because like,
cornbread breaks.
I've got to stop
yeah,
eating this cornbread. And so when we go out and play. Anyways, long story. But anyways, yes.
Playing where he pinned you down and tried to pull your
in
shirt off. Right,
yeah,
right, of course. Yeah.
And
yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
I'm flat anyway.
Playing.
So you're not going to learn that way anyway, yeah, buddy.
That's so cute.
That is an amazing story.
That's
story.
Why is it creepy Coleman? To me? I don't understand.
Too dash creepy. No, I know. It's
and
so
you worked with Gary Cole.
I was with Gary Cole.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. And you know the funny thing?
He tried to pin him down and take his shirt off.
I don't believe that you're... Boy.
He tried to pull his pants down.
Jesus.
How was the Mike Judge experience? Was it everyone sort of coming in with their own ideas, or was he pretty?
I mean, both. That's the great thing about Mike is he's such a genius. Like he has his own vision, and you see it in all his movies. It's just this really twisted, kind of weird thing. But he's not persnickety about any of it. He's kind of open. I thought that it'd be different because, like, as an animator, you picture, well, he's got it drawn out in his head and he wants it to match that. But he was also a bass player, so he kind of came. It was a little bit like band rehearsal. He's like, oh, all right, I kind of dig what you're doing there, and I don't know, let's try it again. And it was fun. It was
well
fun.
With Mike, because I mean, I remember watching the. I used to, pre-internet days, you'd have to go to these Spike and Mike Sick and Twisted Festivals of Animation, and you would see all of Mike Judge's stuff. And, you know, his artwork wasn't really the strongest part of the animation. He was amazing with characters. He did the best, like, Inbred Jed and, you know, Beavis and Butthead were basically just two side characters for this larger world that he had.
It's an anti-perfectionism. He's yeah. not a guy that was like, well, I can't make it because I don't draw. He was like, no,
It was sort of internet philosophy before the internet.
Yeah. yeah. It was like mediocre is good enough.
Right.
Get it, you know, get it out there and then we'll update it, you know,
well, it's
we'll patch it later.
Yeah, because there's something about, you know, when things are too polished, they automatically smack of corporate involvement mm-hmm. and then people, mm-hmm. even if they don't understand why they don't trust it, they're like, I don't know, you're trying to sell me something. So when something's a little dirty and rough around the edges, it feels like, right. oh, this guy just made this in
totally.
His room.
Creative spirit.
Yeah,
totally.
Exactly. Which you see, you know, with...
He made it in his MTV room.
Yeah. yeah.
Wow.
Well, before that, he started that stuff at home. He, like, went out and actually bought a piece of equipment that's basically like a camera pointing down.
Yep.
And, like, hand-drew all the stuff.
That's awesome.
You know.
So it was fun, the movie.
It was a ball.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I had a great time.
That's what people want to know. Like, they love hearing that their favorite movies were,
not
like,
disappointed.
That it wasn't a struggle.
Yeah, no, it was a blast.
Yeah.
Lily, how was High Fidelity? It's like one of my favorite movies.
I know, right? Ugh, I love Frears.
I can't believe they managed to move that from London to Chicago.
Right.
And make it work.
That was a blast because it was also all my buddies from Chicago. Yeah. So everyone had sort of that shorthand because they'd known each other for years. And Frears, I mean, Frears is so brilliant.
His wife's great, too.
Do people, this is sort of the same question that I asked Ron, but do people, how long did it take after Say Anything for people to stop singing Joe songs at
Honey,
you?
It hasn't. It's because that movie sort of has stood up, and then they have the test of time. I mean, and then it's 25-year anniversary, so then you had the release of that, so then the song comes back again. You know, it sort of ebbs and flows, and it's such a classic.
I mean, that's one of
those. It's classic.
It is a classic movie, but it was instantly a classic movie. I've always loved that movie.
Well, you know, she's based on a real person, and I think that, like, there's something there that just has that weird, deep authenticity thing that just sort of, you can't make it up.
Yeah.
When I talked to her for the first time after we finished filming the movie, and she was talking to me about Joe. For real.
What?
Yes. She's like, it's not made up. So I think that's also partly why that character just sort of struck a chord. You just, truth is stranger than fiction.
And Cusack was sort of a master at playing the non-stereotypical nerdy guy.
Yeah.
Like he always sort of played that sort of, that heady nerdy guy without being the I'm pushing up my glasses.
That's
you know
right.
Lloyd and you know all the different characters that he played throughout that.
Plus he looks great when it rains.
No. He really does.
Every movie.
He was a nerd in 16 Candles.
I remember. He was one of the two. He was one of the two geeks from 16
That's
Candles.
Right.
There you go. But it was such a lovely era of comedies back then, and a movie like that, which I would say like probably was aimed at a younger audience, but just at a time when teen movies weren't stupid teen movies. They had soul.
Right, like Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yes.
Right? That was right before Cameron. Of course, Cameron wrote that.
Yeah. Have you worked, how many times have you worked with him?
Just once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there other people that you see around, you go, we should work together, but it just hasn't happened yet? Like, who's someone that you want to?
Oh, man. James. I don't know. Not really. There's people that I don't know. It's sort of like when you meet and cross paths and it happens. Do you know what I mean?
It goes the other way around, too. It's like it's Sadie Hawkins thing where actors don't get to ask directors out. It goes the other way around. You
right.
know, like they have a thing and then they want you
All the
for
actors
it.
Are just up against the
yeah,
wall.
Yeah, you're They're standing up against the wall, you know, practicing your curtsy. You know.
Maybe that's why, yeah.
Unless you're producing your own stuff, it's, you know, and then you're picking a director as a producer rather than, I think, as an actor.
Are you producing any stuff?
No.
No?
He just produced a baby.
You know, part of the thing is about that, it's kind of the way it has to be because the story's told, the director carries the story from, you know, pre-production all the way through post. They're the ones that have to live with it. You give a movie... Really, a year, at least a year of your life.
Easily.
Probably more.
Even on the small films, like Insidious, I was like, I cannot believe I was on this for over a year.
Yeah.
Even a small movie like that takes a long time.
As an actor, you can kind of swan in for
I'm always envious of actors that, you know, actors can come in, do a project, and then move on to the next one, and the next one in a period of a year, like in a period of me making one movie, like I see my actor friends, they would have like done 4 or 5 different projects. And I'm like,
and they all
have
The
so
Rock
cool.
in it, which is weird.
But as a director, you have to essentially be the encyclopedia for. You're basically the master of that
world and that universe. And for an actor, you kind of get to come in and just be this one element of that, which is nice. Directing, just it truly, directing sounds awful to me. Like, it sounds like you have to know the answer to everything.
Yeah, you do.
At all times, and you are the end point for everything. It all comes back to you in some way or another.
Yeah, you do, and you just have to make sure that you know that you have answers. And a lot of times, you don't necessarily have the answers to give people, but you just have to play like pretend like you have. That's part of the trick as well. Is I always say part of directing is you know is how well you kind of hide that you don't know what the hell you're doing.
Remember a story, and I don't remember the director, but somebody they were doing a piece on him. And our department came and said, we need to know which of these two chairs to use. And he looks at it and he goes, oh, that one. And the interviewer was like, how can you do that in a split second? Just, you know that's the chair. And he's like, what chair? What are you talking about? You know, and I think the point was sometimes they just are there to make a snap decision that doesn't, they don't
really
have to think about
it. Do you do that as actors? How much do you come in, you know, when you know you're, you know, oh, I'm getting up, I'm going to work a shoot all day. How much do you know, like, this is what I'm going to do today, and how much is it just...
I try to do that. I sort of think that 95% of the preparation that you do is not because that's how you're going to do it. It's just so that you can tell yourself, I'm prepared, and you don't shit your pants mm-hmm. when you go in and then try to wing it. But yeah. Ultimately, I think you're always I'm always trying to work on being able to just wing it as it goes, and not fall out of it and go, oh, I'm winging it, you know, and the preparation just gets you there.
Yeah,
I think it's important. I think it's the same what Ron's saying is I'm not a big fan of storyboards, okay? Even though I'm a very visual director, I'm not a big fan because I hate the idea that everything's so locked down. I like being able to come on set and be free but still have an overall mm-hmm. umbrella concept as to what you want the film to be, how you want the scenes to play out, you know, how you want the camera, the actors and all that to perform and work out. But I hate the idea of being so rigid and locked in because I feel like part of what makes filmmaking fun and exciting is discovering it when you're on set, you know, mm-hmm. like when you discover things with your actors, with your DP, you know, with people around you. So I get it when you're making a much bigger movie, like, you know, where there's a lot of CGI, there's a lot of green screen work. You need to know every single shot. Every shot's pre-vised out. And so I can understand from that standpoint. But if I don't have to do that, I'd rather not do that. Because mm-hmm. I think having the freedom to kind of discover it as you're going along just brings so much more to the film. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When you're acting, how do you know that you're getting it? Does it feel like anything or does it not? Does it feel like nothing? Like, how do you?
You know what? In some ways, it really doesn't matter how I feel because I've really learned as an actor, like, I don't, I'm just too subjective. So it's like, especially with plays, I know that. I could feel like an awful performance. Then I get off and everyone's like, no, you were totally on. And I realize, you know what? I'm just not the one to ask, especially if there's complicated stuff with the character. How's that not going to bleed over? Let's say the character's really sad for 2 hours. How's that not? How am I not going to be a little bit sad thinking about my performance? Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So it's just like I'm not the one to ask. I just try to just be as open as I can, to show up the best that I can, and maybe talk to myself the next day about it. Maybe after we've had some sleep, and then we can constructively look at what happened. Do you know what I'm saying?
Are we the worst judges of our own work, do you think?
I think our input's interesting, but I think we need more input than just ourselves. So I might feel shitty about a take or a scene, but really it's like I have to check in with the director. I'm not going to go on my own feeling. Like, the feelings are not the facts.
Right.
Like, there's a lot of feelings happening, and I've got to, like, put a lot of things into it.
Oh, I guess that's true. I guess you're trying to essentially have a logical approach to the way feelings work, which doesn't really make sense.
Right. Yes. And yeah. So you work within that. And it's like, and I think it's really the director. And if you respect your director, which I can't see how you couldn't, taking something on. I couldn't imagine working with a director I don't like.
Yeah.
Right. Because it's everything. It's just everything, you know?
Well, when you're doing
that's
it,
true.
You're the only person in the whole movie that can't see it. You know what I mean? You can't look at it.
Right.
So you don't really know. I feel like it's a good sign if you finish a scene and you don't have a lot of opinions about it, like you don't really remember how it went. That's at least a good sign that you weren't spending the whole time with a little scorecard going, okay, I got that. Okay, well, I know that one. You know,
like if you're not overanalyzing it.
Yeah.
Do you like playing characters? Do you like playing totally normal characters, or a character that has a pretty specific quirk, or do you try to find that quirk? Like, in other words, if they say, "Oh, you're just a guy," like, what do you do with that? How does anyone just be a guy?
I think there's a that's a really good question. I mean, any just a guy is like a really complex individual. The question is how much of that is on the page. You know what I mean? Like a guy crosses the street in the background. He's got a whole lot, you know, he's got a job. He went to college somewhere, da, da, da. You can spend 10 weeks mapping all of that out and say, well, it's going to affect how I cross the street. It's probably not ever going to get to the audience. So you could also come at it where you just go, my butt itches, so I'm going to scratch my butt while I'm crossing the street. And that's going to be alive and real and something that someone might notice too. Who knows? You know, it's probably going to get cut out of the movie anyway.
No matter what you do.
So you just do something that gets you through it.
Yeah.
That you enjoy.
What is something that you do if you're in a scene and the other person? I'm positive this
no
did
names.
Not happen in this
I
movie.
I know we're naming
but,
no names.
But and the other person's just not. They're not there. They're not bringing it. They don't care. Whatever. Are you then in the moment? Are you required to sort of match their energy, or do you try to elevate? What do you do if your team's not
well,
on board?
Well, like with movies, like if it's really a problem, I'll pull the director's side and say, we have a problem. So what are we going to do here? And either they'll fix it, or maybe we'll shoot it, and then later when they're gone, we'll bring in the AD, and then I'll do it with the AD or whoever. You know what I mean? I had to do that once because it was just untenable. It was just like I had to shoot it with somebody else. You know
wow.
what I mean?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah, Courtney Love. I mean,
okay, all right, that one you can say.
Enough said.
The Liberty Mutual of Actresses.
Poor thing. But anyway, I mean, I love Courtney, but she's so
this is Courtney
pain.
Love or Liberty Mutual.
Just like mash the two of them together.
You know what I mean? Yeah, right. Exactly. But like with plays, it's hard because if you're not getting with plays, there's nothing you can do in the moment.
Right,
because
exactly.
So it's about acceptance with a capital A.
How do you dig yourself out when you show? I mean, obviously, you know, people go, well, acting's not like, you're not like building anything with your hands. I go, no, you're not. But it's tough emotional work. And when you show up and you're sick or you don't feel good or you're just in a wall, like how do you push through that?
I think all that stuff's great, actually. It just goes in. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, okay, so I guess my character's sick today or tired now. You know what I mean? And like I don't have to paint circles under my eyes because I already have circles under my eyes. So
right.
You just think, oh, I guess why would they be tired? Oh, yeah, they'd be tired because of X or
yeah.
something. But I just think all that shit goes in the stew.
You know what's really weird is I've gone on with a really, really high fever, really, really sick. I've seen other actors do it, and it's really weird. Like the curtain goes up, and it's just like – You're like human again, and the curtain goes down, and you're really sick. It's
adrenaline.
Like
yeah,
it's like the mom lifting the car off the kid. It's like something weird. It's like lizard brain stuff takes over or something. You're just like there. It's kind of a miracle. It's weird.
Do you feel like that acting kind of makes you more adaptable and flexible in your life as a result?
No.
No.
No. I mean, maybe not. I mean, I wish you'd hope, but not necessarily.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Or
like, can it be cathartic? Can you work through shit? Nah. But I can't imagine how it couldn't bleed in if you're open as an actor and the neurons are firing and you're adapting, how that flexibility or aliveness couldn't somehow bleed over a little bit.
Here's a question. As parents, so you work all day, you are exhausted, you have this sort of emotional thing that you've absorbed from whatever it is that you're shooting. But you got to be present for your kids because they need you. So how do you, you know, like where do you find that surplus of energy?
It's just a special thing. And it's like, I think every actor should have a kid, whether they rent a kid for a while. Just something that's bigger. It's something that's
rent
bigger than you. It's something that's bigger. It's all you need is something bigger than you.
Don't you feel like some actors, though, they don't think there's anything bigger than them?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Rent a kid. Because when that kid is saying, no, I'm going to shit here, I don't care. I can't make it to the bathroom. No, don't you understand? Like, when the kids' need is so great that it's like you have to focus on something that's bigger than you. It's a kid. The kid helps with not dwelling.
So some people would have to rent Jesus?
Yeah. Yep. I'm kind of being facetious, but I'm really saying that a kid is great because it just gets it right-sized. Because acting, it's kind of easy to dwell. Maybe if you've been in a heavy thing all day, and it's just easy to go there. And then, but a kid just like, you just don't have the, you just can't.
Yeah.
So it's just great. It's just great because it's more right-sized.
Is this your first child?
First child, yeah.
How are you feeling?
Awesome.
Good.
Yeah. It's the greatest thing ever.
Are you glad that you had a kid when you were not like in your 20s? Do you like that you sort of like, because you have a kid in your 40s, you get to sort of like, you know who you are.
Wait, Ron, you're not in your 20s?
It's a real paradigm. I'm not in my 20s. It's kind of paradoxical because on the one hand, it's the greatest thing ever. And you go, oh, shit, I really would have loved doing this 20 years ago. But then at the same time, you're like, if I did it 20 years ago, it wouldn't be this kid. It would have been another kid. So it's just perfect.
And that kid would have been a piece of shit, right?
Yeah, seriously.
Who knows? That kid could have sucked.
That's why you don't time travel, guys. messes things up.
Never meet your kids. What about you? What's?
I have no kids. Okay. Thank God. That I know of. Thank
your
God.
Kids are your films at this point.
Yes.
Your children are your films at this point because that gets the lion's share of your attention and your time. And you have to foster them and teach them how to walk and teach
some
them
scary them. Kids.
They golf. Yeah, no, I've been so busy the last few years that I really haven't had time for anything personal in my own life. I literally wrote from The Conjuring into Insidious 2, and before I even finished Insidious 2, I wrote right into Fast and Furious 7. So it's pretty much just taken up my whole life at this moment.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I think we're about at the end of our time. Sure.
Whenever we say that, the publicists get happy.
It's all right. Yeah. Okay, sure. I mean, there's no, it's pretty, we're pretty loose.
Seems loose.
Yeah, we're loose.
Yeah, it's totally fine. So when does The Conjuring open?
It comes out July 19.
That's right. We're putting this out Thursday. It comes out for Friday. That's Friday.
It comes out this Friday, but I think it opens Thursday midnight.
Thursday midnight.
Oh, really?
Thursday night midnight.
Oh,
yeah.
Fun.
So that's gonna be cool.
Are you guys going to Comic Con? Are you going to Comic Con?
Yes. 3 days.
Lily's going.
Nice. I'll be there. Are you going?
I cannot. I've got a film to make.
So. Aw, buddy.
I would love to go.
If you're doing Fast and Furious and you're like, I need a bearded fat guy to drive by in a Volvo at any point in the movie.
I'll play that guy.
Oh, Jonah, fuck you. Yeah. That was me.
He beat you to it.
Yeah, I'm movie Matt.
So if you want to make the movie slow and relatively discontent, then we're the
guys. You guys are funny.
We'll be the guys. So The Conjuring, it's great. It definitely has like an Amityville vibe to it, which feels awesome, and I really enjoyed it. So thank you so much.
Great, yes.
Thank you for being here, Ron. Nice to see you, Lily. Lovely to see you. Karaoke again sometime soon.
I hope. If you need me to stand next to the rock and be the before.
Boulder.
The young, the shorter.
Just the before. Who knows what happened, what the government did to him, but it worked.
That's true.
Yeah.
Ayers Rock, that's a place from your home country.
Ayers Rock, yes.
Why do I know some... Oh, I dated an Australian girl. Is that the reason why?
Well, there you go. Yeah. Makes sense now.
Yeah, I'm so glad I got something out of a relationship. It was just a bunch of Australia facts.
You know so much.
I really do.
You got history and geography.
All right, we've mentioned two of Chris's girlfriends. Go see The Conjuring. Thank you.
All right. Guys, thank you. Thanks for having us.
Everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by LegalZoom.com. Whatever your legal document needs, LLCs, wills, trusts, trademarks, and more, they've got it. Over 12 years and 2 million Americans have used LegalZoom. Start your business or protect your family today at LegalZoom.com using the offer code Nerdist.
I feel like I was blindsided.
Because it's a competition show.
From the producers of Jury Duty and The Bachelor.
We have scoured the earth for the 14 greatest reality contestants that were available during our production window.
Comes a reality competition show about reality competition shows.
Nobody has dared to find out who is the actual best at just being on a reality show. I'm your host, comedian Daniel Tosh.
Is win or go home.
Each episode, our contestants will face new challenges that will test their strength and lack of life skills for a chance to win $200 million.
Thousands, not millions.
$200,000.
Prepare, because it's about to be ugly, crying.
Lots of fighting.
Tayshia, I have to defend myself.
Celebrating 25 years of reality TV with your favorites.
I have diarrhea. You cannot do this to me.
What in gay hell have I got myself into?
The GOAT, premiering on Freevee and Prime Video on May 9th.